All right, welcome back to KMBR tonight. Carrie Crowley hanging with you until 10 p.m. On Wednesday night, we had our Giants Hot Stove League show. At that point, the stove was still hot. Thursday night, the stove is off, completely off, and that means it's time to welcome in our next guest, Marty Lurie, to discuss all that's transpired thus far this offseason, what will take place next with the lockout taking place between Major League Baseball owners that they've enforced on Major League Baseball players and the Players Association. Marty, how are you this evening?
Well, very good. I'm glad to talk with you. And things are cooking in the hot stove, believe me. Well, and Sunday we get the Hall of Fame decisions on the Golden Era Committee and one other. So that'll be something positive over the weekend.
Indeed. Anyone you're particularly hopeful gets in?
Yeah, I hope Dick Allen. I hope he makes it. I hope Gil Hodges makes it for sure. Tony Oliva. You know, the funny thing is, Jim Cott, you can make an argument for four or five of them. Mm-hmm. That's how good the ballot is. And then on the older one, Lefty O'Doul.
Yes.
It's a crime that Lefty O'Doul is not in the Hall of Fame. And I know Buck O'Neill's probably going to get in, but he's there already. He's got the award named after him. Lefty O'Doul deserves it, and I really hope that he gets that support.
Yeah, there's a lot of people around San Francisco who hope so as well, especially what he meant to the Giants franchise, the San Francisco baseball community, and all the above.
Well, and what he did in the world. He's the father of Japanese baseball. Mm-hmm. And after World War II, he was called upon to go to Japan by General MacArthur and get baseball going again, and it was definitely, you know, diamond diplomacy. And he was a huge, huge part of that, as well as taking tours there in the 30s to Japan. So Lefty O'Doul, not only a great hitter, but he was a great humanitarian and very, very big in the world. So I'm glad that we could mention him.
Well, you mentioned get baseball going again, and that's exactly what we need. But it feels like we're a long way off with the owners locking out the players on Wednesday night at 8:59 p.m. Pacific time. These negotiations, Marty, they're stalled now, and it doesn't feel like there's going to be much progress made over the next 30 to 60 days or so.
Well, probably not. But, you know, as I say, we've had a real civics lesson in the country, starting with the election right through January 6th and everything else. And this is another lesson of America, where we have the ownership versus the worker. And you got to go back to the 1890s. to the monopolies and things that were happening then, and how the union started. And you know that from your family's involvement with unions, how important they are. So we have the ownership on one side and the worker on the other side. And in baseball, that landscape has always been tilted towards the owners until the mid-60s, until Marvin Miller got involved in arbitration and free agency. It changed things. So we're still fighting that battle of the owners wanting to control the salaries, which is their main expense, of the players. Now, it's an interesting negotiation because it's kind of like we all have an opinion on it, but we don't know the first thing about it, really, mm-hmm. because the owners never open their books. We have no idea. We have no idea what kind of money they have. And just put it in common terms. If you were going to go out and buy a house and you were going to buy a house for $500,000 and you had the money in the bank to do it, well, what if Larry Kruger said, you know, Carrie, you ought to buy a $2 million house?
That sounds like Larry spending other people's money.
Right. He doesn't know what you have in the bank. And that's why these negotiations are always weird, because the owners never disclose what they have for money. So what they're doing here is having a fight against each other, where the main cost of running the business is the labor, and that's the main asset. And the owners want to control it and keep that labor and keep that cost as low as possible. So that's where we are. And Manfred said it today. He said the lockout will now begin the time clock of putting some pressure on the players. They're not losing anything now. There's no incentive for the players to settle this negotiation right now, because they don't get paid. There are no games or anything like that. Now, come March, when they don't get paid for spring training, but when the games are on the horizon, and if there's no agreement, games could get canceled, that will cost them money. So therefore, that they will begin to negotiate a little more earnestly at that point. But he had to get it started now to get that clock running, to give them a few months before March. Why did they do a lockout? Well, because they didn't want to have anything at all to do with a strike with baseball. Because in baseball, in the 1990s, of course, 1994, the players struck in August. And they had tremendous leverage over the owners at that point. Because they had the World Series, they had the playoffs, and they had the rest of the season in September, the pennant race. And the owners got stuck. They really did, and it was bad for baseball. So they're not going to give the players a chance to strike during the season. They're going to make it tough for them right out of the gate where they're not going to get paid. So they want that advantage on their side. Now, the last corollary I'll say to this, I can't stand Rob Manfred.
Few people can, Marty.
Well, I'll tell you why. He has his title on TV. It says Baseball Commissioner. Well, what does that mean? He really is the hired spokesperson for the ownership. That's what he is. He's not there to mediate. He's not there for the good of the game. There is no good of the game. It's what's good for me in finances. That's what it's all about for the owners. So when he gets up there and says, well, we made this proposal, that proposal, under the guise of being a baseball commissioner, it sounds like, gee, he's an impartial person. Why don't they get together? He's not impartial. He is representing the ownership, and that's the way he should be portrayed on TV, and everyone should understand that all he is the mouthpiece for the ownership. And it's been that way going back to 1947 when Happy Chandler became the commissioner, and then all of a sudden the Yankees and a couple of other teams didn't like Happy Chandler and what he was doing, and they knocked him out. And they have never had an independent commissioner, really, until Faye Vincent. And Faye Vincent got involved in negotiations where he tried to mediate, and they fired him. And that's when Bud Selig became the commissioner. But what Manfred is, and I know I'm going on a little bit about this, but I hope it's helpful, he is the CEO of Major League Baseball and the ownership. So get off the TV. I don't want to hear you. I don't want to hear your position. You're portraying yourself like some arbiter, some judge, some fair-minded person. You're not. You're an advocate for the ownership. So we'll see. There's no games now. A lot of the free agents have signed. So basically, I think we're in a position where we've had a good taste of the offseason. And things always settle down December 15th to January 1st anyway. And the winter meetings, you know, we won't have that. But I think baseball can weather the storm.
Well, one thing I'd just like to add on Rob Manfred, Marty, he pulls in a $50 million annual salary. It's not the players who are paying into that.
No.
It's the owners who
of
pay
course.
Rob Manfred that massive salary to go out there and look independent, but really advocate specifically and solely on their behalf. So I'm right there with you. Get off the TV, get back to work, and make this happen. What did you think about the optics of the billion-dollar spending spree within the final 72 hours before this lockout? How you had teams that have cried poor in the past, going out and spending big on free agents. You had the Texas Rangers spending $500 million on their middle infield. The Detroit Tigers going out and getting Javier Baez on top of Eduardo Rodriguez. That's more than $200 million committed to free agents this offseason. What did you make of all of the activity, including that of the San Francisco Giants?
Well, I thought for the teams themselves, look, the New York Mets, they live by the back page in New York. Our dear friend Mark Sanchez can tell us that. but, you know, you have that. And then you have the players who really rushed to sign, and they got the money that was out there. And I'll say it again. The owners don't pay you unless they have the money, unless they have the expectation of getting the money. So the Lindor contract for all these shortstops was settled last year for what the market would be. So Semien and Seager and Baez fell into line with that. We haven't seen Correa yet. But a lot of the teams and a lot of the players are concerned what's going to happen to the tax, the threshold. Is it going to go up? Is it going to go down? What's going to happen with draft pick compensation? So they wanted to get their money now. And they may have taken a little bit less, and the teams may have paid a little bit more to get it done now before this impasse happens. And then they'll be looking to see what the result is of the negotiation, which may have an effect on salaries. So I think the teams are smart to do it.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.
I think everyone got market value or above, and I think it was very good for the players and the owners to do it at this point. As I say, there isn't a team that's gone bankrupt, and people are lined up around the block to buy teams. So they've got the money, and they spent the money, and I think it's terrific. This idea of, my goodness, if we allow free agency and if we allow this and that, it'll destroy competitive balance, is nonsense. It's double talk. It's nonsense. They said the same thing in the 70s with free agency. My God, if we have free agents, they'll be we won't have competitive balance. It never happened, and it will never happen because of teams like the Giants and the Rays and the Red Sox and teams like that and the Dodgers and the Padres that have gone through analytics, and they understand that now they can get labor for less money, and they can build a team that way. So they understand how to do it. And for the Giants, they have a ton of money to spend. And Farhan, it's so funny because we still think like Brian Sabian. Boy, you got to go out and you got to make a trade. You got to trade Joey Bart and so-and-so and get so-and-so.
You got to get Jeff Samardzija at 5 years, $90 million, Marty.
Not anymore, pal. It doesn't work like that, and not for these Giants. These Giants are different. They're built differently. And Farhan is not going to overpay for anybody, and everything he's going to do has got a big reason attached to it. So there's plenty of time for them. They're waiting to see how the market settles. But let's face it, Belt is back, which is huge, huge, without Posey. They still need a hitter. And Larry says, and I said Castellanos, but who knows if they like him. Larry said Nelson Cruz the other day, but where are you going to put him unless you have a DH? So Chris Bryant, maybe bring him back because you know him, but now he's got a good market going as well. So they need a hitter. They need a hitter. And we'll have to see what they do with that.
I'm right there with you. Marty Lurie joining us here on CanBR tonight, the iconic host of Talking Baseball, here every weekend during the season when the Giants are playing games. And, of course, with the lockout, no Giants activity, but there was plenty of it in the weeks leading up to the lockout. Marty, I am curious. The Giants decide to let Kevin Gausman go. Five years, $110 million. He's off with the Toronto Blue Jays. They're not in the game for Robbie Ray. They don't sign Marcus Stroman, who signed for a pretty reasonable three-year $75 million. Instead, they go Alex Cobb, 2 years, $20 million. Alex Wood, 2 years, $25 million, can be up to $30 million. And Anthony DeSclafani, 3 for $36 million. What do you make of their spending, which seventh most in baseball thus far this offseason, but still relatively reserved to what we know of? It's the Sabian and Evans Giants.
Sure. Well, they got the guys they know. They know what DeSclafani can do. And Farhan has said it. I'm trying to cover 162 games. Wood, when you break down his numbers, and I just saw that the other day, you know, his numbers for ground balls and this and that and all the things that set off the computer are outstanding. So Wood is a good guy to bring back. DeSclafani gave him good innings. And Cobb, if he regains the form, and this is always the issue with Farhan, bring guys in. If he regains the form, he's a ground ball pitcher. Mm-hmm. And they love that. So everyone they get, I don't care who it is, they get names I've never heard of in my life, but they all have something in that computer that tells you at some point in their career they did things that the Giants think they can develop to make them better. So I have full faith in Farhan. I really do. I like to sit back and watch, and I don't speculate, because he will come up with the players, with the team. He's got his whole bullpen back. He needs a hitter, and he needs to make sure, you know, Yastrzemski has a good year. Lamont Wade is legit. Ruff is a year older. The pitchers are a year older. So you never know in baseball what's going to happen. But I have faith in what he's going to do. If he picks up names of people that I've never heard of, I say, more power to him. Let's see what he does. And you have to trust him. 107 wins speaks very loudly.
When did this change in philosophy happen for you? Because I'm not sure that you were fully on board with your faith in Farhan talk after the 2019 season when they used 64 different players, after 2020 when they missed the playoffs by a full game. When did you realize that, at least for you, you believed in the philosophy and the player acquisition model?
Last year, when I saw, and look, we were in spring training and, you know, talking about it all the time, and we didn't know what Cueto would do, what Di Sclafani and Gausman and Wood and Webb, we didn't know what they would do, and Ruff was there. And then all of a sudden, I watched the season, and I watched the way they played, and I watched what Lamont Wade could do when they got that swing. And what Posey and Crawford and Belt bought into, how they prepare. I don't think anyone in baseball out-prepares the Giants. And when I watched that 107-win season, they just couldn't lose. They couldn't lose. And he put together a team in today's game of 2021 that had all the right numbers. And that's the game we have today. And when you win 107 and you're – computer tells you who to get, and your eyes tell you a little bit about it too, and you get a little bit of luck, you have a tremendous, tremendous advantage over the other team. So when I saw that he could compete with the Dodgers and the Padres, and there wasn't a team in baseball that pushed him around, I said, okay, he knows what he's doing.
What about the Dodgers right now? Losing Max Scherzer, losing Corey Seager. They do bring back Chris Taylor on a four-year deal. What about a 106-win team that maybe isn't going to be as strong, knowing what they gave up at the trade deadline last year, Josiah Gray, Keibert Ruiz, to get Trey Turner in the building? What do you think their counter move is right now?
Well, they're probably still looking for more pitching, I would think, because who knows what Kershaw will do. He probably would go to Texas the way it sounds, but he may want to retire as a Dodger. But they lose Corey Seager, which is a bad blow. And they didn't have Corey Seager the year before. They struggled a little bit without him. Trey Turner was a huge disappointment when he came over, and we saw him in the playoffs. He was awful in the playoffs. So I think they're a team that could be in a little bit of transition right now with age, with Turner and with Muncy having that injury. Will Smith all of a sudden is your number four hitter. So I think there's a lot going on. They're always going to have bullpen guys because they're like the Giants. They look for the guy with the big arm, 97, you know, who can get the ball over the plate and, you know, get a strikeout, has a 30% strikeout rate and, you know, the numbers that they love. But I think they're going to slide back a little bit. I really do. I think they're a team that they're in some transition right now, and they haven't made a big splash in free agency, and I think they're still looking for some more offense. So I think there's a ways to go. Pitching-wise, let's face it, look, their pitching completely fell apart.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Scherzer had the dead arm. Urias couldn't get anybody out. Buehler, I think they worked him to death. I think he hit the wall in the playoffs as well. So this is a team, you know, and Dustin May is still not back. They're a team that's in, and Bauer, we'll probably never see him again as a Dodger. Who knows what will happen with him. So I think they're a team in transition. I really do. It wouldn't surprise me to see them disappoint this year. It really wouldn't.
Yeah, I think that a step backward is definitely in order. It's only natural from 107 and 106 for both these teams. Maybe they're at 98 and 97 next year. Who knows?
Which would still be incredible.
It
would be incredible, and you're 10 games worse. But I want to see the 10 games you're going to lose. I want to see who's going to beat you.
Yeah, I agree.
And that's the one thing about the Giants. When they got the lead, and Kapler did an excellent job, he did, whether the game was scripted for him a little bit beforehand or not, that bullpen was solid.
Mm-hmm.
It was solid. But it worries me when they talk about, you know, Sean Jelly and Tyler Beede and Sammy Long and people like that being part of the rotation, giving them those games that they need to add up to 162. I think they really need another anchor guy, someone in there. I would have liked Stroman.
Mm-hmm.
I would have liked him. I thought he was good. But they're not going to spend that kind of dough. They're going to wait and wait and wait out that market and then jump on what they call a value player. And that's the way they operate. It's not the Giants of 20 years ago, McCovey and Lincecum and Mays and Will Clark and Kevin Mitchell, you know, and all the trades and big names and marketability. They market themselves by winning games, not by getting players. If half the team walked in the room, you wouldn't know who they were. But they win games. And when the race got exciting in September, the fans came back. But now they got to get the fans back again, and you've got to have players to do that. And you need a little personality, and I hope that Farhan realizes that.
Absolutely. Hey, one more, Marty, before we let you go here. Of all the free agent signings, the one that surprised me the most, Mark Melancon to the Arizona Diamondbacks, 2 years, $14 million. What did you make of that?
Well, you look at his last 2 years, they've been terrific. He's got, 50 saves, 45 saves each year, whatever it was. I mean, he's been terrific, and he's got that curveball. He's got a good strikeout rate. All the numbers add up for him. And, 2 years, $14 million?
Exactly,
so.
Yep.
Yeah, that's peanuts. That's lunch for you at the original Joe's. that's nothing, in today's market. So they got a first-class reliever, a little older, but he is someone who has proven himself over the 2 years. He was terrific. He fell down a little bit at the end of the year. I think he got tired. But, boy, I'll tell you something. The Braves wish they would have had him. Along with Will Smith. That would have helped their bullpen, but they let him go. And I think the Padres did a good job with him.
Well, you said he got tired. He's not going to get tired saving games in Arizona. There's simply not many to save. Marty,
no.
Thank you so much for joining us here on KNBR tonight. We always appreciate it, and enjoy the rest of your offseason.
Well, we will, and, as I always say, Rogers Hornsby said it best. What do? He says, well, I look out the window and wait for spring. Well, in this one, I'm looking out the window and waiting for them to get settled and get ready for baseball. And I think by the time spring training comes around, we'll be ready and ready for the 162. It's going to be another great year. I really think that they're going to be very good.
Absolutely. Well, looking forward to it. And thank you as always. More coming up next. You're listening to KNBR tonight, 104.5 680, the sports leader.
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Kevin Millar, we're all paying rent in Ohtani's world, right?
And the Dodgers world. Game is healthy. Game is good. And, I get asked a lot, is that good for baseball? Yeah, it's good for baseball. This is definitely the team to beat, because that should be your next correction, Richie, is this World Series a bust for the Dodgers and Dave Roberts?
Hell yeah.
Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.